Welcome to another edition of Teaching Restored, where we help gospel teachers teach better. I'm Kevin Jones.
I'm Julie Hilliard, and I'm excited to introduce our guest today. This is Izzy Hilliard. She decided she wants to sit in the chair with me and kiss my face.
Oh, how sweet.
So she's going to hang out. She's our guest.
She's sitting back behind your back in the chair.
She's back behind my back. I don't know why. Or in my armpit. So I hope it's not distracting. If you are just listening, not watching, it's my dog in my armpit. Very exciting.
Good place to be.
So I want to talk about something today that I encountered this week. And I've kind of been giving it just a little bit of thought. And I think it's just an interesting point for discussion. Today's going to be a little bit shorter, but I want to just kind of chat about something that has come to light in my brain as we've been in kind of a more confusing part of the Book of Mormon. Okay. So it's not confusing because of the principles that are being taught. In fact, it's like you can take scriptures from these chapters. We're in Mosiah, Book of Mosiah. You can take scriptures from these chapters. You can read a scripture and you can be like, oh, there's an entire lesson in that scripture. This is amazing. And I mean, some of the most doctrinally rich scriptures are found in these chapters in Mosiah. But I don't know about you. For me, there is a heck of a lot going on in these chapters. Am I right?
You are right. Yes.
Okay. So I want to just because this is a great little snapshot, we're looking at chapters 18 through 24, current event this week right now. Okay. By the time this is actually posted, we'll be somewhere else entirely.
Can I say something real quickly? One thing I love about what we teach, not to put down other podcasts at all, but they'll teach you, okay, here's what to teach, and it's good for that week. Right. Yes. We're trying to say, okay, here's a principle you could use many different times. Now we may reference what we're on, and we're not posting this till later, but it still applies to other weeks and it still applies to other lessons or times when we're talking with others.
Totally. In fact, it's funny because I've had this thought for a few weeks in a row, because at the beginning of each class that I'm teaching, I'm like, all right, let's talk about the story. Right? Let's really dive into the story. And what I found, and this was really, really interesting and actually really comforting to me, strangely, is that I wasn't the only person who was struggling to piece together the story. Mm. I wasn't the only person who didn't have it totally right. I know a lot of people have invested the time and effort to really understand the stories of the Book of Mormon and how everything fits together geographically and all of that, and props to those people. But that's not something that I've invested a ton of effort to do before. And yet this time through, I'm realizing what an obstacle not understanding the stories can be. And even more so, what a massive gift really understanding the story can be in terms of how much more you get out of what it is that you're reading, right?
Yes.
And so part of what I've been kind of toying with is how much energy, effort, time do I give to helping people understand the stories and context in the scriptures versus really diving in and talking about principles of the gospel that people can apply to their lives? Because you can't really apply Zarahemla to your life. Where is Zarahemla? Is it north or south? Who's the king? Is it Mosiah? Right. Is it Benjamin? Don't know. So that's not going to change your life, right? So let's start by just kind of talking about why would you want to invest in the stories of the Book of Mormon?
That's a question for me.
That's a question for you, Kevin Jones.
Okay. So I don't know where you're going with this, but I'll just give it a quick example.
Answer honestly.
So I think it will be next week. I haven't finished the Come Follow Me reading for this week, but I think it's outside for next week. When everybody finally gets to Zarahemla and makes it back to Zarahemla. That's this week? Mm-hmm. That's this week. Okay. They get to Zarahemla.
Everybody's back in Zarahemla.
Okay. And King Mosiah says, all right, let's talk. And he talks in front. And what I did last time I read the Book of Mormon, actually, was I pieced together how many disparate groups were there? And I realized, oh my goodness, there's this group that feels this way. There's this group that feels this way, and this group, and they're, and he's trying to have one message to people who are coming from totally different, really backgrounds, life experiences. And then how does Alma the Younger come out of that? And the Sons of Mosiah had, I mean, oh my goodness. And then I started to realize that's not so different from today. We're doing the same thing. And I mean, I could go on and on and on, but that's my experience there.
So what I hear you saying is that it becomes more relatable when you invest in the mess, when you start to dive in and really, like, you could miss completely just how many different groups are actually coming together. You could miss that point completely if you didn't really dive into the story and you just be like, yay, we're in Zarahemla now. Yep. And here's what they're talking about.
I have for years. Yes.
And so the depth of just how profound that unifying period is and just how difficult it would be from the perspective of King Mosiah and how many complexities and different kind of perspectives are actually playing into that.
Mind blown.
Okay, so yes. You nailed, in my opinion, the number one reason that it's worth investing in these stories. Because I think that we lose the depth of the principles that are being taught if we just kind of go, I don't really know exactly what's going on right now, but oh, what a great verse. And so in order for us to really understand the depth of what is taking place, and second, in order for us to be able to relate in new and different ways each time we read the Book of Mormon, because one time we read the Book of Mormon, we might feel more like we are from Limhi's group versus, oh, wow, I was part of Alma's group. Oh no, I was part of, you know, when Zenith came down and da-da-da, and they went into, oh, wow, and then they reconnected with Ammon, and oh, wow. You know, like, it, you may relate to a different group depending on which, you know, which phase of your life is happening that time that you're reading the Book of Mormon. And so it becomes not just more beautifully complicated and relatable, but it also, you fit into the story differently, and the applications that you get are different each time you read the Book of Mormon. And so we lose a lot of depth. So if we don't really understand the story. So I'm thinking about this and I'm like, so how much time and attention do we give to these stories? And so if it's okay with you, I want to kind of talk a little bit about just taking a snapshot of what's going on right now. And what I would like you to do is help me highlight what are some of the things we would miss if we didn't understand the story.
Yes.
Okay.
I like it.
So let's take a step back for just a second. And I'm just going to say we're in Mosiah. We're in chapters 18 through 24.
Okay.
And so if we're looking at those chapters, let me just kind of start with me in 18 and look at what one thing that we need to understand is that it starts with Alma. Okay. So we know, and all, I think anybody who's read the Book of Mormon before recognizes Abinadi and King Noah in that story. It's very familiar, okay? And then we might go, oh yeah, and Alma was one of the priests and he got away. And so we know when we get to chapter 18, okay, we're following Alma's story, right? And
then I love that you're doing this. This is exciting. This gets me really, really excited that you're diving into this. So go ahead.
Okay, this is fun. So I have to tell you really fast. This is so dorky, but it was kind of effective. So the past couple of weeks have had really complicated stories like this. And so even with the whole King Noah and Abinadi story, like, I really wanted to put it in context. And so I think this starts back in Enos, Jerem, Omni, Words of Mormon. And then as we get into Mosiah, we've really tried to flush out the story in class. And I have a new trend. So dorky. So we go through and we tell the story and we piece it together. And then I'm like, okay, should we do the second grade version? And then I do a dramatic interpretation of how I would tell it to second graders. And it's fantastic. not just like, because I'm going, okay, how would I explain this to a second grader? So I'm pulling out all of the lingo that I might use, and I'm pulling, extrapolating the big words, and I'm like going, simplicity. How simple can we possibly make the story? And it helps so much. Like, that's, it helps my neat. Brain, it helps their brain. And then it's really fun because you can talk about how buff Abinadi is, and, you know, you can talk about what stud Alma is, and second graders are like, yeah. And then Gideon became like Iron Man in the story. And anyway,
very good.
Just a thought. It was kind of like fun. That. Okay. So here's where we're about to get confused. Are you ready?
Confuse me.
So chapter 18, we're like, we're following Alma. I remember Alma was one of the priests. Okay. And he got away and Noah was chasing him, or Noah sends the priest to chase him. Like, he's getting away. And now turn and we get to chapter 19. Gideon seeks to slay King Noah.
Mm-hmm.
Who's Gideon? And we're like, uh-oh. Oh, well, keep going. And then, do you know what I mean? Okay. So then we're 19 and we're like, wait a minute. Hold on. Lamanite daughters are abducted. No, it's 20. Mm-hmm. Lamanite daughters are abducted by the priests. No, wait, what? Okay, hold on. And we could get so confused. And so one of the things that we have to remember, and this is genius on the part of Mormon, by the way, we have to kind of go, look, everyone, chapter 18 is still Alma's story. But then there's this other group that we're going to start following in chapters 19 through 22. And then we're going to pick up Alma's story again in chapters 23 and 24. Right. And all of a sudden people are like, bing, that's right. Okay, so now I can follow the story. Because if you're trying to apply, you're like, where'd Alma go?
Yeah.
In these middle chapters. And you're like, what the heck just happened? And it gets really confusing.
Yes.
So remove an obstacle by giving people the context. Who are we talking about? How does it fit together? So in your mind, I think it's genius that Mormon did this, but why? Like, why? What was Mormon thinking? Why would he go, oop, pause Alma, and then let's follow this other group for a little bit, and then, oop, pick back up with Alma? Like, what? Huh? Why would he even do that? How does that even make sense?
So I think about movies right now. Mm-hmm. They do that all the time. If you think of like a Star Wars movie, they're from one group who are fighting on a planet to another one who are fighting in the stars to Luke Skywalker, who's with Yoda on another planet. And they just keep bouncing back and forth. And it's all happening at the same time. And then when they come together, then all of a sudden you have a context of how they're all feeling and why their actions are going to be what they're going to be when they come together.
Bam. Okay. So these groups are going to end up coming together, but them coming together is not a big deal unless you understand how they got there.
Yes.
And unless you understand kind of the differences of their experience getting there.
Right.
Right. Okay. So now 19 through 22, we've just said are about, a different group kind of, and then 23 and 24, we're getting back to meeting up with Alma and his group, and then everybody in 24 is going to end up in Zarahemla, and then we're going to pick up where you referenced your favorite part, and it moves forward from there. Right. So what I did for my class, and this is something that I find to be very helpful, if you have a confusing story and there is a way to visually kind of represent it and build it, that really does help people to kind of mentally piece things together. And oftentimes you can just Google diagrams, and that's great. You can find tons of really great resources online that other people have built before. Yeah. For me, I like going through the exercise of building my own sometimes because it makes me think harder, right?
Yes.
So I'm going to have Kevin put up a diagram that makes you want to barf when you see it. Okay. I want to throw up when I see this, but I actually built it piece by piece by piece. And this is the story of these two groups and what's going on with them. And so really quickly, you see the stars. They're by Alma and Limhi. And we're kind of following these two groups. Well, it's really important for us to remember how Noah is related to Limhi. Notice they're the same color, right? Remember, Limhi is Noah's son.
Son.
Okay. And so it's important for us to go, oh, kingdom got transferred from Noah to Limhi. And I believe that actually happens in chapter 19. We're going to see that actually take place. It's in verse 26. And we're like, Limhi being the son of the king,
there you go.
Noah, who just got burned, having the kingdom conferred upon him. Okay, good. So now we're understanding we're following one group, which was Noah's people become Limhi's people. And then we're following another group, which is Alma, who fled from Noah. So that's that little arrow leading down to Alma. And then I built it by, like, if you were to cover up all the stuff connected to Noah, okay, cover up all that mentally. I built it by saying, well, where does Alma go? Alma goes to the waters of Mormon, right? And think about this sacred experience that takes place at the waters of Mormon. Well, it becomes more sacred when you understand that Alma's actually in hiding and he's fled from Noah. And so this story makes just how special this experience is more rich and more clear, right? And then you read about how they end up fleeing from Mormon, the waters of Mormon, to the land of Helam. And you read about how it feels like they're getting really settled there, like they think that they're going to stay, which makes their departure from the land of Helam to go to Zarahemla even more like, wow, that was inspired. That was absolutely the Lord's plan. They were led. They had the faith to go from this place where they'd set roots. Well, and they were under threat too. Yes. And you kind of go, oh, that makes that so much more rich and scary and crazy. And then when you read about the land of Helam and what takes place there, you're going to see the connection to Limhi and his group, because you jump over there, you're going to be like, who's Amulon? Wait, who's what? How did, why are these getting, And it gets really crazy. So you've got to go pause. Let's understand what happened to Noah and his group. And you're going to read about all these things that happened with the daughters of the Lamanites. And they're confused because who took the daughters of the Lamanites? Wait, who got blamed? It's so confusing. So look at my diagram here. You've got two groups from King Noah. So this whole thing goes down with Abinadi. No, Alma takes off and you've got two groups. You've got one group who stayed with their wives and children, despite Noah's suggestion that you like ditch the slow people. Come on, the wives were like carrying the babies and diaper bags. And like, you know that they were being the Sherpas for all the toys that their kids wanted to bring along with them and everything else.
And the crackers.
Yep. So they're a little weighed down.
Yep.
And yet stupid Noah is like, ditch them. They're slowing us down. Run. And they ditched. So there's these two groups.
Right.
One ditched. One didn't.
One didn't.
And the experience of those that didn't ditch, now all of a sudden you're like, wait a minute, they're in bondage to the Lamanites. And you look at their experience of landing in bondage and you compare it with the experience of the other people in Alma's group that land in bondage. And you're like, all of a sudden going, whoa, they came into bondage in two different ways. And what can we see by comparing the different ways that they came into bondage? Well, what about their experience in bondage? Uh-oh, all of a sudden it's going to get way more complicated because the people that ditched their wives, there's a group of them that regret it and want to go back, right? And then all of a sudden you're like, oh, how would I feel if I was one of the wives that got ditched and all of a sudden my husband comes back? Whoa. So now there's like this lesson in forgiveness and you see that they have this peace ceremony and you're like, wow, what does a peace ceremony look like in my life? How do I make peace with someone who's hurt me and accept them? You would have missed that completely.
Right.
Right. And so I'm going through this and I'm like giving way more detail than I probably need to about this story. So I'm going to just pause for just a second because like, you can piece the rest together. I don't feel like I need to spend everybody's time going through the specifics of this story, though we do need to recognize just really quickly, because when we tell it from a second grade version, we're going to talk about what a super stud Gideon is. I've decided that Gideon is like, we notice from looking at the details of the story that Gideon is also an empath. Like he goes into these situations, he listens, and then he assimilates all of this information. And he has these insights, not because he spent the whole time talking, but because he spent a lot of time listening. And he's like, they think we took their daughters. Oh my gosh, this is just a big misunderstanding.
Right.
And he's able to be a piece. See what I'm saying?
Right. Like, and he's okay, so, and he has to do it quickly because the Lamanites are coming, and he's got to say, no, okay, stop, King. I get what you're saying, but I got to say this real quickly because we're about to be destroyed. And if you don't listen to me now, then I just actually just realized that this last a couple days ago when I read that, I was like, wow, he had to do this now. This was an urgent thing.
Right. But had he not been listening and paying attention and watching, wait, they're super upset. Most of the time when we see somebody that's super upset, what do? We get super upset with them and we're like defensive and and he had to be like, oh, hold up. What's really going on here? And click, 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 and efficiently see something different. But he was only able to see it because he didn't get wrapped up in it in the first place.
Right.
Okay, so I've mentioned like a whole bunch of things that along the way we learn from understanding the story. What would you add to it? Like, think a little bit about your understanding of the story. What are some of the lessons that we would potentially miss if we didn't understand the story? And I've mentioned the lesson in forgiveness. I've mentioned, you know, some of the lessons about Gideon. Like, I've just kind of dropped some of them in as I've gone along. What do you see though?
I'm gonna go back a little bit to Abinadi himself.
Yes.
And with Abinadi, I've always wondered where Abinadi came from.
Right, right.
And so I have made up stories in my mind and even written them down of where Abinadi came from. Oh. I think actually happened is that Abinadi was in the group of Noah and Alma, and Alma and Noah and those guys were best friends when Noah took over, they became priests, but Abinadi was just out of that realm. He was kind of the nerd of the group and didn't get accepted into it, but he was the nerd because he was more righteous, right? He wasn't following along with that. So he knew those guys and was not doing that. And then if that's true, which I have no idea if it is or not, but I just made up a story, right? If it's true and he goes in front of these people, he knows these guys very, very well. And he has to call them to repentance. And what kind of a story is that compared to some random guy just coming out and calling people to repentance? You're talking to people that you grew up with.
Right.
And calling them to repentance. That's totally a totally different story, right?
Right. And now all of a sudden, think about how much more nervous you would be.
Right. Right. Absolutely. But then you have to be bold, right? So you're standing up to them and maybe they bullied you before, but now you're bullying them with the spirit or not really.
That's one way of putting it. Never ever thought about that phrase, bullying them.
Bullying with the spirit. Yes, yes. Maybe not a thing, but it's one thing that you're doing is you're saying, okay, where do they come from? And then I like to even expand that and then just make up stories of where could they have come from? What could I'm filling in the details of what I don't. And even from that, I start to learn, wow, that's kind of like me. Cause I'm in that spot as well. I've never been in that spot, but that could be a spot that I could be in someday. And he was really brave to be able to do that or whatever it is, but to understand the story and then maybe even fill in more details with possible stories, the insights are incredible.
Okay. But is there harm in that? Like, is there harm in?
No.
Okay. So what I hear you saying is that if the goal is to apply the scriptures to ourselves, we've got to actually be thinking about what it is that we're learning in the scriptures. Yeah. And we learn best through stories.
We do.
And so part of how these come alive to us is when we take kind of, I'm not saying take creative liberties, but what I am saying is we take kind of some mental liberties. And as we ponder upon the scriptures, part of what we're doing is filling in some of the blanks that exist in our brains. And the way that we connect with them is through stories. And so what were you going to say, Kevin?
I saw it on your face. But we do this already, right? I mean, we are of the generation where we may have set our kids in front of the video cassette where they are watching the scripture,
living scriptures, right?
They did that. They made Noah, King Noah, a certain kind of guy, and Abinadi a certain kind of guy, and Alma didn't have a beard, but everyone else did. And right. I mean, that's filling in the details, right? That is doing that exact same thing. And it's, and we were happy to sit our kids in front of that and have them watch that. Right. Mm-hmm. Why don't we do that as well? Why don't we start filling in those details and understanding the connections and understanding, okay, how did they really feel, and even making it up a little bit? And I think that's perfectly okay.
I do too. You know, it's kind of interesting because something just came into my mind that I thought, so let me just push back on the point that we both agree with.
Okay.
kind of weird. But so there have been times and people that I've heard of that have actually felt deceived because they've come to learn more information about, say, a story from church history than was artistically depicted in the things that we saw most. So, you know, for example, we now know, and it's common to talk about the fact that at certain points during the translation process, Joseph Smith looked into a hat.
Correct.
Versus all of these depictions of him, you know, with a sheet up and like the golden plates in front of him or whatever the case may be. Mm-hmm. And so part of what I think we have to remember in the process of doing this is that we are taking artistic liberties in our own minds in order to bless our lives. Mm-hmm. And that we don't get so married to someone else's interpretation of the scriptures that we miss the meaning for us personally.
Right.
And so that's part of why I think it's important for us to invest the time and energy in trying to piece together the stories for ourselves so that they A, don't become a stumbling block, but B, so that we recognize that in the process of doing it, just like everybody else, we've kind of had to fill in some blanks, but those blanks that we're filling in, we are filling in hopefully with the guidance of the Spirit, because we're being prayerful about how we're approaching this. We will see things that we never saw before in the stories that will help to bless our lives versus allowing the stories to become a stumbling block in and of themselves.
Yes.
Right?
Let me give you a quick example. When last year, my boys and I went camping, and then on our way back, the younger boys fell asleep, and Bryce and my oldest and I were talking about Judas, and because we were talking about the New Testament, right? So we're talking about Judas, and well, what if he was like this? Well, what if he fell because of this way? And all of a sudden we thought, you know what we should do is we should put together a mini series, and each episode is Judas coming from a different coming from a different angle and ending up at that spot and seeing the different, a thousand different ways that he could have gotten to that spot where he denies Christ and then kills himself afterwards. I mean,
What are the possibilities, right?
Right. And then we start recognizing, oh, I'm kind of like that, aren't I, a little bit? Right. I need to be careful of that. Or, oh, I'd never thought of that. I see that happening right now in the world. Or so many different perspectives.
Right. And I think like it's so interesting because you talk about that just with Judas, for example. Judas becomes alive to you when you start exploring this, right? And I think that part of, like, maybe you can't relate to the Judas that you've painted this evil picture of, but you can relate to the Judas who really was deceived by, you know, peer pressure, people saying, well, wait a minute, you know, and who all of a sudden finds himself just in this horrible place. And, oh, I've been there. Oh my gosh, I have totally blown it before. Look at how one decision shaped everybody's perception of Judas. And all of a sudden you empathize with Judas versus villainizing or right. demonizing who he is.
Yeah. Or maybe, right? maybe he wasn't deceived. Maybe, but he had this one belief that he held onto that was righteous, but taking it too far becomes unrighteous. And it wasn't a deception thing after all. It was a, this is the way it's got to be. And Christ kind of went away from that saying, no, that's not where I'm trying to go. But he's like, but that's where we need to go to lead these people. And so he started going away from what Christ wanted to do. I mean, maybe it was more that way. And we recognize that maybe I'm a little bit too strict in this. Maybe I have set my stake in the ground and I need to relook at this or be a little bit more lenient or maybe be a little bit more forgiving of others who don't have the same view that I do.
Right. Okay. So let me pull one from this story that we're talking about right now that I think is interesting. And this doesn't come from one of the main characters. Like you're describing Judas, he's the main character. We're talking about how we relate to Judas. We could do the same thing with, yes. Are there parts of me that are like Noah? Are there parts of me where we'd like to think not, but oh, hold on. Are there parts of me that are like Noah potentially? So there's one more story that I want to use this for. So this isn't necessarily us like honing in on a specific character like Judas or whatever, but you know, there are can we relate to King Noah in certain ways, right? We don't want to investigate that, but we can. What about Alma? What about, you know, but here's one other that came out to me only because I looked at this whole picture. And this felt to me like a really important lesson that I never would have seen otherwise. I started to look at the role that making covenants played in their experience while they were in bondage. Okay, so you've got these two groups. Both of them end up in bondage to the Lamanites. Spoiler alert, Alma and his group, Limhi and his group. They come into it differently. Limhi's group has not yet made covenants. So we got a sneak peek earlier in Mosiah to the fact that Ammon the explorer.
Right.
Ammon is going to come under the direction of King Mosiah to look for the people that came down 80 years before and were never heard from again. So he's coming down to kind of check on them. He's going to come in contact with Limhi and he's going to start to connect the dots with Limhi. But then we go, prink, pause that story. And we're picking it back up in these chapters. Limhi and his group don't actually make covenants with God until Ammon comes to them. So this experience that they have in bondage, they haven't made covenants yet. Where you have Alma and his group who make these covenants at the waters of Mormon that we reference all the time at baptisms, yes. right? In chapter right. 18. And it breaks down some really beautiful things. And one of the things that really stuck out to me this time is that if you look at how they're laid out, they increase in intimacy, in terms of the intimacy of a relationship that we have to have with someone else to be able to fulfill our covenants, as they sequentially go through from we're covenanting to bear one another's burdens to actually, what's the next one? Not comfort yet. It's to mourn with those that mourn. And then, wow, like you have to know a person to actually mourn with them, to comforting, being actually able to know what would help ease, like to actually bring them comfort. Anyway, so then they make these covenants and then look at what happens to them when they're in bondage. They are still temporally and spiritually helping each other, lifting each other. Their experience in bondage is different than that of the people of Limhi. And what role did covenants play in that? We never, ever would have even noticed that comparison had we not recognized the story, had we not really gone through and studied the story.
Right.
And so the point that I wanted to make today is that I feel like investing in the stories enriches and adds depth to the things that we can pull out of the scriptures. It's worth it. And if we can figure out how to do that in a way that we can teach it to a second grader, like get to the point where it's so familiar that you could teach it to a second grader, and then we can continue to actually teach some of the principles that have more application in our lives. But the stories are so important. We don't want to overlook them or minimize or miss them, because in doing that, we miss a lot of the lessons that we could be learning from the Book of Mormon and other scriptures.
I love that. Okay. Three things I took away from today.
Okay.
Well, four things. Boil it down to second grade. Try, you know, do what you can as you're connecting the dots and putting that all together.
Yeah.
But even map number two, map out what's going on and how there are splinter groups. And then it's not only with this story, but it's, you can do this with mapping out with a lot of, I mean, especially as we get into the war chapters, that starts happening as well.
Right.
And you need to think, right. So map it out so that we can see kind of the bigger picture and then try to understand how each are feeling and what each are in. Number three, if we start our, number three is we start adding in details that aren't there and we say, well, what if this happened? What if that happened?
Yeah.
That's right. Oh my goodness. Well, that could, you know, that has a different experience and et cetera. And then number four, you just talked about looking at two different groups through what I'll just term this covenant colored glasses. What role do covenants play in each of these? So you're looking at it through a specific lens to two different groups. Mm-hmm. One that you may not, I've never thought of covenants and how they made a difference in how they lived and how they thought, but you're right. I mean,
in bondage specifically, right?
Right. I think that's a great way to look at that. So those are four things I took out of different ways that I can help myself understand the scriptures better.
Awesome.
Good job. Well done. I love this. Thank you. Oh, I love the scriptures. I love this.
Me too.
Yes. And then as I love this more, I want to just go teach it to my kids more and teach it to the ward and stake and more people. And this is awesome. And teach it to people who don't understand and who don't believe, saying, I mean, like you said, I mean, we think about how Joseph Smith translated this, right, in different ways. And the intricacy of all these different splinter groups, and then they all come back together. You can't just put that together in a few days and make that kind of stuff up. That does not happen. I mean, it is so rich and layered. I love it.
I know, right?
Oh, good job, Julie. Thank you. Thanks, that was God. Wonderful. So share, subscribe, do all that, comment. How are you going to use this? Let us know. Thanks for coming, everyone. Until next time, go teach the gospel and be bold and have the Spirit. See you later.